we have the paint mix, cyber text, bitmaps to do the paint text mapping to the cyber text according to the alphabet that we are given, right? Each single paint text maps to the same single cyber text. And basically, we also knew that there was a special subset of the substitution cipher, which was the shift cipher, where we make the permutation alphabet by just shifting the cipher text alphabet with regards to the plain text alphabet. Okay. So in the first question, basically the question says that we have a CEDAR cipher that gives us the cipher text, it asks us what the plain text is, and we are told that the most common plain text letters in the plain text are E and I. Okay? So we know from what we talked about frequency analysis that the main issue with substitution cipher is that the pattern or the behavior, statistical behavior of the plain text does not change when we go to the cipher text. So if we know that the most common plain text is E and I, then we can go through the cipher text and we can go look for the most common cipher text letters, which is L and H. Right? So we know that L and H must be E and I. Right? The other thing that we know is, and what the question tells us, we're dealing with a shift cipher. So we know that the cipher text alphabet is just a plain text shifted relatively to the plain text. Right? So therefore we should also know that, well, H should probably be the E and L should be the I. Because L is later than H in the alphabet, just like I is later than E in the alphabet. Right? And from that we can make our substitution alphabet, and L is I, H is E, it's a constant shift of 3, and the plain text becomes I came, I saw, and I conquered. Right? Famous saying by Julius Caesar. Okay? So for question 2, it just gives you a little bit more basic practice with the substitution cipher. So encrypt the following plain text using the substitution cipher alphabet given, right? So using the given alphabet, the cipher text becomes EFYLLEXFE, right? So some interesting things you can just see here based on the frequency analysis stuff that we know. We see that the same pattern in the plain text letter also happens in the cipher text letter. So we have the E to start and end. It just so happens that the alphabet is mapped to an E, so we have the E at the beginning and the end. We have the double N as well. So we see that the pattern does not get broken up in any way. And then the second one, if we are decrypting the plain text, right, J is equal to S, Y, we have two M's, and then E, T, R, I, and C. So it basically becomes symmetric. So that's straightforward substitution cipher. Okay. Next thing is the one-time pad. So we know that the one-time pad needs a key that is random and an equal length as the plain text we are encrypting. We encrypt and decrypt by using an XOR. So we take the plain text, we XOR the key to get the cipher text. We take the cipher text, we XOR it to the key to get the plain text. We talked about one-time pad. We said that it has very nice security properties because it's the one cipher that's theoretically secure, right? Because if somebody with infinite resources brute force all the secret keys, then they can still not determine with any certainty what the correct message or pad was. Right, so in terms of a work example, so we're working with a reduced alphabet here, so we can give you a table to map some of the letters to a binary value. This is not, doesn't have any significance, it's no ASCII or anything like that, it's just something for this specific exercise. And we want to encrypt the word hello with the one-time pad A, B, C, D, E. Okay? So we take the plain text, we can write it down. We can write the binary representation of the plain text down. So we get the binary representation from the tutorial table. So 8 is a 0, 1, 1, and everything else is If one of them is 1 and the other one's a 0, the answer is 1. So 0 and 0 gives us 0, 1 and 0 gives us 1, 1 and 0 gives us 1, and 1 and 0 gives us 1. So the first hypertext value is h. Right? Also what I said last week, whenever we XOR anything by 0, we just get the same value back. Right? The second one, e and b, 0 and 0 is a 0. 1 and 0 is a 1, 0 and 0 is a 0, 0 and 1 is a 1. That gives us f. For the l, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1 and 0 is a 1, 0 and 0 is a 0, 1 and 1 is 0, 1 and 0 is 1. Okay, so we don't have to go to all of them, but our cyclic h value is basically h, f, j, I, and k. Okay. So for the question 3b, we now using the ciphertext we have in the previous question in part A, and we decrypted with a different 1-1 pattern. So instead of using A, B, C, and D, we're using F, O, B, L, and we decrypt. Same doing the XOR, so the H is 0, 1, 1, F is 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 0 is 1, 1, 1. 0, and then we get C. And if we do the entire encryption now, we get a different word, which is fly. Okay? And in that, as we mentioned last time in the lecture, this is the secret for the strength of the 1-1 pattern. So in this case, we have a very small possible alphabet, right? But if we had this plain text, if we had this ciphertext, H, F, J, I, K, right? Essentially, we would decrypt it with all possible combinations of the 1-1 pattern in our alphabet. We will also find all possible 5-letter combinations of plain text. Right? And this is going to have a lot of 5-letter words in it that is going to sound like a valid message. Right? So our real message was hello, and now we made fly. But it could also have been any other plain text message, including the correct one, including the hello. But the attacker is going to sit with basically every single possible message. Any one of them could be the real message, and none of them is going to be more equally likely to be correct than any of the other. So basically, the attacker is not going to know. And that's the basic principle of why it's theoretically secure. We'll basically get all possible messages back, and as a result, the attacker, even if he is able to brute force search all the key values, he will still not know that hello is specifically the one that is correct, because it could also be any other 5-letter word. Okay, so one disadvantage of the 1-time pad we talked was key management. We said that even though the 1-time pad is theoretically secure, it is not practical to use, right? Because every single time I'm sending message, the key must be equal in length to the message, and it must be new, and it must be random, right? So if I want to go online, download movie, and the movie is like 4 gigabytes, for us to use 1-time pad, the key must also be 4 gigabyte long, right? And then the streaming service must give me the 1-time pad. Because every single time I download the movie, the 1-time pad is going to be different, right? The one-time pad itself is not as long as the movie, and they must somehow give it to me securely so no one else knows what it is, right? So if that streaming service provider has a way to give me that 1-time pad in a secure way, then they should probably just use that same method to give me the movie, right? So in other words, it's very difficult to actually use 1-time pad. Right. Unless it's for very short messages with really, really fast. But for modern data, it's pretty much useless. Right. What it did do for us, which is good, is that it started people thinking about what a modern day cipher should look like. Right? And they said, well, if we build a scheme cipher, it's going to approximately have everything the 1-time pad had, similar benefits, but maybe not all of the drawbacks in terms of us being able to practically manage the key, but still have an encryption and decryption structure that looks quite a lot similar. So what they said was the stream cipher had a short key for the sender, which did not change every single time the message was sent, right? But the sender and the recipient would use this key and some algorithm to make basically something that looked like a one-time pattern, a random sequence of binary values, right? They would then XOR that to the plaintext to make the ciphertext, and the recipient will create the same sequence of binary values, because using the same algorithm and exactly the same key, and because it generates the same sequence, it can XOR it to the ciphertext, and it will recover the plaintext. So what we can now sort of think is, we have a short key, and we generate basically a one-time pattern on the fly, basically a new random value that's of equal length in plaintext. We XOR it to get our ciphertext. The recipient can also make that one-time pattern using his key in the algorithm, and it can XOR it to the ciphertext to make the plaintext. So this is not as secure as one-time pattern, right? Because basically, this is now a short-length key. So an attacker can search for this long short-term key, and if they find the short-term key, they can make also the same key string, right? So in other words, it's pretty much now standard if I can find the key of the string cipher. Okay, so quite easy. We have secret key, we make key stream, we store key string to make text, to make ciphertext. Recipient has secret key, makes the same key stream, XOR to the ciphertext, okay. Right. So the last question asks, if you are renting an apartment and you are using a banking service to pay your rent, and the banking service uses a string cipher to encrypt the message between you and the bank, and the format of the message is the amount you're going to pay, the account you want to go, if you go to, and then your PIN number, or maybe a one-time password to authorize the transaction. If your neighbor has exactly the same landlord, which means they pay through the same account as you, and they can intercept your message, can they modify this message so the money goes to them instead of to the landlord? So what it's essentially asking you is, there's an attacker with some known plaintext. We have a scheme using a string cipher. Can that attacker with some known plaintext modify the encrypted message without necessarily attacking the stream cipher itself? In other words, the actual algorithm like RC4, or knowing the key of that stream cipher? And the answer is yes. So we know that the ciphertext, we basically need the account and the amount and the password XOR to the key stream. So this notation here means concatenate. I know students always ask me to complete some of the course. So this is concatenation. Concatenation is used as an operator for strings. So if you want to add strings together. Okay? So ciphertext is account concatenated with amount, concatenated with password, XOR to the key stream. So if the attacker knows the account value, then the attacker knows that over here we have the ciphertext that corresponds to the account. And the attacker can take that bit of ciphertext, XOR it to the account number, to get the piece of key stream back that was used to encrypt this account number. And then the attacker can take that key stream, XOR it to its own account number, right? And that would give us a new ciphertext, which is the attacker's account number, the amount, and the password. And if we send that to the bank will then transfer the amount to this modified account number. So if we want to think about then what do we need in addition to confidentiality service, if we are using a string cipher, we have to think that we also need integrity of data origin authentication. And this is actually very important. Whenever you're going to encrypt anything with a string cipher is, it's not very easy to decrypt the data, but it's actually very easy for people to modify the plaintext. Even if I didn't know anything about the plaintext, if I changed the value of the ciphertext from a 0 to a 1, or from a 1 to a 0, if the recipient decrypts it, that plaintext flip is also going to flip. Right. So it's very easy to modify. So whenever we use a stream cipher, we must also have integrity service at the same time. And when we get to almost the last lecture in the course and we talk about wireless security, we'll see that this is exactly when they first make a Wi-Fi standard, it's the thing that they did not do. Right? They use the stream cipher to encrypt the data, but they have no integrity, and people showed that it was very easy to, on the fly, change Wi-Fi communication. Right? So in terms of looking at a workout example, if we have the attack, if we know the legitimate account number 1234, we want the attacker's account number 5674. We're setting 6500, and the PIN is 9141. Right, so this gives us a message of money, account, PIN code. We have some key stream, which is 01234567891, which is supposed to be random, but we just pretend it is random. So we take the plain text, we XOR it to the key stream, and we get our ciphertext. So here are the ciphertext values and their corresponding binary values. So the attacker knows that these four digits in the middle, 5753, is the ciphertext for that account number. Right? So it's this zero, it's this one, this one, this one, and this one. So the attacker takes this ciphertext value, XORs it to the known plain text, which is 1234, and recovers the key stream. Right? So you also now see it's the correct key stream. 0100 0101 0110 0111. Right? Takes that key stream, XORs it to the attacker's account number, and gets the new ciphertext. And then takes the new attacker ciphertext, replaces the old ciphertext, and gets a new encrypted message. And then the new encrypted message, if we decrypt it by XORing on the original key stream, then gives us the original amount, the new account number, the original password. And if we send that message off to the bank, now the bank will basically transfer that money to the account 5674. Right? So very, very easy way to modify stream cipher encrypted data. Right? Without knowing the key, without attacking anything in the cipher itself. So the important bit to remember is easy to modify data when we're using stream cipher. If we're using stream cipher for confidentiality,